Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Pull Up Podcast. Today is December 22nd, a pre-Christmas episode. We got a lot of games on the Christmas slate, but we are not here talking about that. Joined with me today is, I should say as usual now, because it's been four or five times in a row now, is Oliver Maroney. You can follow him on Hoops Critics website as well. He's also about.com, Today's Fast Break, KL Sports Show. He's been featured on NBA.com and NBA TV, all the way on the west coast of Portland, Oregon, and I'm all the way on the east coast of Boston. And we are here going to break down the NBA playoff seedings. And I know you're sitting there saying, how the hell are these guys talking about NBA playoff seedings already? The season just started. Give us a break. Haven't even had the All-Star break. How are we doing today, Oliver?
Not too bad. How about yourself?
Doing great, doing great. I hope you're all geared up for the holiday this year. Hope you got everybody's gifts ready and excited to, which I, you know, love the holidays for the fact that we don't work and we get to hang around with our family. You know, you might see some people you don't normally see or hang with. But for me, especially the way the NBA has kind of taken over this holiday, I absolutely love it. I make sure I get to my family's house bright and early. I get a nice spot on the couch, and I make sure that I'm queued up for all four games, you know, back to back to back, a little break in between that the second and third game. But, I think it's the best thing the NBA has done.
Definitely. Yeah, they've done a great job with basically making sure the Christmas holiday is something that is for all basketball fans to watch and for just sports fans, because a lot of the time there isn't much NFL going on. So it's a great time to be an NBA fan.
It absolutely is. But we're here to talk about – we're going to go to both conferences, but I think the meat and potatoes is coming in the West, because outside of the 1 and 2 seeds, which I don't think are going to change the rest of this way – there's one team that I'll get to later that I think could contend to get to the second or number one seed overall this season. Like I said, very unlikely, but the Warriors and Spurs are kind of running away with those 1 and 2 seeds for the Western Conference as it stands. We all know the 24-game wins in a row that the Golden State Warriors had. We know the Spurs have been quietly right behind them with 24-5. But after that is the drop-off. It's a 4.5-game drop-off, then the Oklahoma City Thunder at 19-9. You know, teams 4, 5, 6, 7, all kind of mashed together by one game there, and that's the Mavericks, the Clippers, the Grizzlies, the Rockets. And then after that, you got all those sub-500 teams who might make the playoffs at sub-500. That's hard for me to say in the Western Conference with the Jazz, the Nuggets, the Suns. And I don't think we can worry about, the Lakers, the Blazers, the Kings, the Warriors, the Timberwolves, or the Pelicans. I think those teams are kind of written themselves off so far. Although, I mean, the Suns and Blazers, Kings and Timberwolves are all one game apart. So who am I to say that neither of those teams can make that jump? They're only a couple games behind from the eighth seed. But let's start with the most important question. Right now, who is the number three team in the Western Conference for you? And it might not be based on their record right now. It might just be the way they're playing for you.
Yeah, So I've pondered it back and forth. I really like the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't like how they've played as of late. I think Billy Donovan, with the talent they have, they should be a lot better, at least watching it on the court. And it looks like Russell Westbrook and KD don't have that same chemistry they had at the beginning of the season as they have lately in the past couple of games. Especially against the Clippers, you see a bunch of just ill-advised shots that shouldn't be taken and just silly mistakes. But really, I like the Oklahoma City Thunder as my third team in the Western Conference, if we're looking at it from a talent standpoint, as well as not exactly how they've played, but overall throughout the season how they've played okay. Just the past 5 or 6 games have been a little bit of a disappointment in my mind.
Yeah, you know, they had that tough game against the Clippers. They overcame it. That loss against Cleveland, that's a game that you kind of look at, they probably should have won. I'm going to play devil advocate here for a second because you know, since KD has come back, they're, I believe, 11-3 or, 12-3. They missed those 6 games when he was out, and they played 500 ball, which was kind of expected. Mm-hmm. You're not expecting to win all those games. But, but the games they've lost and the last 3 losses, they've only lost by 4 points, 2 points, 6 points. All three were on the road against three, arguably the top three Eastern Conference teams, the Cavaliers, the Heat, and the Hawks. So what's scary to me and what should be scary to most people is, you know, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it abstractly, which I think I'm kind of doing right now. And, you know, as poorly as they played, and we all agree they're not playing to their best potential, you know, they're still working under a new coach. You know, KD's still getting his health back and his legs back. Hasn't played with Russell a lot lately with the injuries to both. And yet here they are, you know, 11-3 in their last 14 games. Their three losses against tough teams in the Eastern Conference. Outside of that, they're taking care of business. And if that's not their best basketball, I'm almost afraid to see what will be their best basketball.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, by a talent standpoint, they've got two of the top 10 players in the NBA right now, and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant can knock down pretty much any shot on any given night at any point in time on anybody. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they turn out throughout the season and how they play. I definitely expect it to improve. I would really look for the Oklahoma City Thunder to try and find a trade partner to get either a big down low, someone not necessarily who can fill up the box score, but more or less on the defensive end and more of a hustle standpoint. You know, Adams is okay. They've got Ibaka. They've got some other guys that can play that kind of role, but really injuries have kind of hurt them in the long run. And I think depth-wise, they're going to need someone in that 6, 7, 8 rotation man spot where they're going to need some help.
Right. And the thing to me, which has been pretty interesting, is they haven't gone full heel on us yet. They're not the villains yet. I kind of want them to be. And I like this new age Kevin Durant just speaking his mind. He just doesn't care. And the quote that really stuck me the other day is, I believe it was last night, someone asked him about, you know, getting hacked, and he said, if you don't want to get hacked, learn how to shoot your effing three free throws. I kind of like this. He's become a media villain in a sense, and it's kind of shocking because he played that good boy. You remember the whole, you know, no tattoos are visible when he's wearing his basketball outfit, when he's wearing his basketball uniform. But he went from that, you know, the darling for everybody while LeBron played the villain, to essentially becoming the villain himself. And I think they're tired of being the nice people. I think it's time for them to, you know, everyone always says to win in the NBA, you have to first lose. And everyone's experienced it. You know, Jordan was knocked out in the playoffs prior. I believe outside of, like, people like Tim Duncan and Magic Johnson, most people do not win right away. And it takes losing to figure out how to win. And, you know, these guys were in the NBA Finals against the Heat. They lost that series in five. I believe they made it back to Western Conference the following year right after that, got knocked out. And they kind of regressed after that, which is why we have the coaching change that we do now. And I think that is a sign to the players that, hey, guys, it's on you now. Potentially Kevin Durant's last year here. I'm sure he'd love to bring a title to the Oklahoma City Thunder. I just feel like, the whole team has had enough, and it's now time to go out there and do their business. What's your take on them becoming, you know, quote-unquote, these villains now?
I think they're definitely trying to be that, and I think they're just – I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder has been the media down there has been terrible on them for a long time. I mean, their NBA Finals loss, the newspapers hit them pretty hard, and the questions he gets, it's outrageous. I mean, you really – he hasn't had much good publicity for a while now, and I think that wears on players. Players see it. I know they do. You know, they've got Twitter and all the different social medias that go on now where they can look at basically anything that anybody says about him. And I don't think Kevin Durant has had the greatest time with the media in the past year or so as far as, like, injuries are concerned. Yeah, he came out with that. I think there was, like, a short documentary about his injury and how he's recovering. But really – they've given him, Russell Westbrook, quite a tough time since they've been there, really, with their relationship together, the way they play together. Scottie Brooks ends up getting fired. So, like you said, it's now on the players. You know, the Oklahoma City Thunder can't just continue to rotate coaches. You've got one coach. That's the guy you're supposed to listen to. That's the guy who's going to be in charge. And if the players can't produce on the court, it's not always the coach's fault. And so, look at Billy Donovan. Yeah, I think most of it's almost the same as what we would expect with Scottie Brooks. But this is on the players, and they know it. And I think they're here to be the villains. I think they, I don't think they care, actually, to be completely honest. I think Kevin Durant is out to try and win a title, and he has that mentality and attitude. You saw yesterday the, whatever you want to call the facial expression when he hit that shot, but you could tell he was pissed.
Yep.
So he's turning into a player I kind of enjoy watching. Just even late game situations, he's one of the best. You know, that shot yesterday, it's a tough shot, even though he's guarded by Luka and Bamute, he gets the shot off and he makes it. And that's really Kevin Durant's MO. And those two guys in Oklahoma City are just two of the best in the NBA. So I don't blame them for being pissed off and angry and upset at what the media has been portraying them as and what they've not done and what they can't do. And, you know, the more you hear that, I can't even imagine being a player and having all that negative vibe going towards me or going towards our team. So,
yeah, you know, it seems like the media these days, and maybe it's just everything, it's just everything's just more negative. All press is just more negative than positive, and it goes all the way around, you know, from politics to sports to, you know, personal. It's really such a ugly world out there these days. But I want to talk to you about a team that I think has been portrayed as ugly, and rightfully so, just the way they've carried themselves in the off season, the way they think about themselves currently. And this team, I actually ran a poll on who is the third best team in the Western Conference. And this team actually got second place in the vote. The Thunder had 65% of the vote, rightfully so. And the Clippers had 24% of the vote. And granted, this poll was a few weeks back. But knowing what we know now, they lost three in a row. There's just so much wrong with this talentful roster. I don't know if it's just poor lineup decisions, if it's an effort issue, if it's, you know, maybe DeAndre Jordan is not worth what we all thought he'd be worth. You know, Chris Paul has no backup. He's essentially the only point guard on the team. You know, you got guys who probably should be playing more minutes who are healthy and big bodies like Josh Smith and Lance Stephenson, yet, you know, guys like Austin Rivers are getting 25, 30 minutes a game. What, in your mind, is the biggest issue with the Clippers going forward?
Ego. The players have too much ego. All of them do. And I think it comes down to that, really. They've basically gone out and got a bunch of stars, big names. They weren't any better from last year to this year. I mean, they really got rid of their best marginal wing defender, I guess you could call him, in Matt Barnes. And then you basically essentially replace him with Lance Stephenson, who's a head case within himself as well, who's played a decent at times. But really, you're looking at a team with a bunch of egos, and they've got attitudes, and they've got – they all want to play. They all want the ball. They're very egocentric about themselves. They, you know, and that's – That's the number one underlying issue with this team currently, at least from what I see. Everybody wants the ball. There's not enough to go around to everybody. And you've got DeAndre Jordan, who I think that whole debacle really killed him. I think that really hurt this team. And Doc Rivers, I think we've got to start having the discussion. Is he really, you know, Doc Rivers, the coach, may not be overrated, but Doc Rivers, the GM, I think you have to start questioning the moves they made, and they've got some serious issues at wing, the three and the, you know, even the two spot with Redick out. You've got Austin Rivers filling in or Jamal Crawford. I mean, defensively, they're woeful, and you can't get anything done in this league with wing defending as bad as they have been.
Yeah, no, I'm with you here, and just so you a little history, because I don't think you understand, or I don't think we were in contact back when Doc Rivers first coached the Celtics, when he was having that dreadful season, and there was firedocrivers.com, and I actually was banned from Celtics blog for in the comments, because I was calling people idiots, and I got a little nasty, because I hate average fans who act like they know and study the game, to the point where, like, they're throwing insults, and I should have been the bigger man, but I wasn't. I ended up getting kicked off Celtics blog because they were also waving their pom-poms to fire Doc Rivers. And I said, no, Doc's a good coach. Look at what he's dealing with. You know, he's working with a 19-year-old Kendrick Perkins, a rookie Rajon Rondo. Paul Pierce is injured. He's got, you know, a 20-year-old Al Jefferson. He's got Justin Reed on the team. He's got a Gerald Green. I mean, we could go through those names, Marcus Banks. Most of these guys aren't even in the league anymore. Yet they wanted him gone, and they thought, like, coaching was the reason the Celtics were so bad. I'm like, well, you're kind of bad because you have a shitty roster. But it's come full circle now, because now I'm watching Doc Rivers and I'm almost like scratching my head as I watch him coach, because I two things, and you pointed it first off, he's not a good general manager, and no coach in this league can play both roles anymore. Maybe in the 60s and 70s, 80s, you got away with it. Even in the 90s, you might have got away with it. But today, and how global the game is, you cannot physically do both jobs completely. You just can't. And, yeah, a coach's decision should be weighed when it comes into acquiring players or making trades, or, you know, because he's with the team on a daily basis, he sees the chemistry, and so forth. But he has not made any good decisions in that terms. And I also feel like having Austin on the roster is actually hurting his judgment. He's not, you know, how do you play your best five or do good rotations at the same time, making sure that your son is getting playing time? I mean, it's almost a conflict of interest there. And you got to think that the team does not respect Austin. I mean, growing up when we all played in Pee Wee or whatever, and there was that kid whose dad played him all four quarters, and, you know, in the back of our mind, we always had, he might be a nice kid, and we, you know, love playing with him and, you know, throwing rocks at the pond, but at the back of your mind, like, what do you think Josh Smith is sitting down thinking when he's getting his 8 minutes a game while Austin's putting in 26, 27 minutes a game? Something's going to be there, and that's going to hurt the chemistry, and this kind of goes back to what you said about egos. You know, this is going to hurt Josh's ego, and if his ego's hurt, and we've seen good Josh, we've seen bad Josh, and good Josh can be very helpful. It actually knocked the Clippers out last year, hence why they probably went out and got him, but something's not right there. So how would you fix it if you were, you know, hired today as a general manager? Would you look at packaging a deal and moving some of these guys where you have a backlog with, you know, you do have a backlog with Stevenson, Josh Smith, Paul Pierce, Jamal Crawford. You know, there's a lot of wing players, and, you know, maybe go out and get a couple guards, a point guy who can help you out, or a good locker room guy. What would you do if you had your way?
Yeah, I mean, I would look at first and foremost, I don't know if you necessarily will need to package a bunch of guys. I have a feeling that Brooklyn is going to leave Joe Johnson go. And if that's the case, if Joe Johnson's willing to take a pay cut, I think that's like the perfect kind of fit. He's not perfect. He's a good fit at a very cheap cost, if you're going to do it that way, because you're really not giving up anything to get him. And to get a guy who was an all-star, he is out of his prime, yes, but he is a veteran leader who hopefully, at this point in his career, wants to win a championship. And that's generally what these veterans want to do. You've got Josh Smith on the team who's, like I said, an ego maniac. I don't really appreciate his game all that much, but he's on the team. You've got Paul Pierce, and then you'd have Joe Johnson and Stevenson and all these other guys. I think you have to look to move these guys, but I don't think you have to move them for the piece you need to get. I think you go out and get Joe Johnson if you can get him. If not, I think you're looking around the league at a wing defender, and I don't know if there's much out there to try and get. I mean, going down the list of players that would be good, maybe that backlog in Phoenix would be okay, like a Morris or one of the either TJ Warren or the PJ Tucker, one of those two guys, because it seems like those two are unhappy. Phoenix is kind of a mess, so I look at teams that are, you know, looking to make moves, and if it's them, I don't know if you make a move with Houston because they've got a mess down there anyways, but you've got to make a trade or a move of some sort, but I don't think you necessarily have to do it in the fashion that people would normally expect. If you go out and get Joe Johnson as a free agent, you can then move Stevenson for potentially like a draft pick or something like that. Because really what the problem is going to be with this team in two or three years is you've got Blake coming up, Chris Paul, who's getting up there in age, and DeAndre Jordan, who are basically all your three guys. But after that, you've got a lot of guys that aren't going to be there next year, like the Josh Smiths and the Paul Pierces and the people like that who may not be there next year or the year after, and you've got to start building for the future. And I think that's where I'd start. I'd look at getting rid of Lance Stevenson or potentially Austin Rivers if Doc is willing to get rid of him, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's a mess. I mean, it's really hard. You've got a ton of guys, and I just think they've done way too much in this offseason to get big names and not actually what they needed. They looked at the names and not necessarily what this team really, really needed.
Now let's look at these other teams here, because the next group of teams is we probably broke down the top four teams in the West so far, and then that next tier is kind of lumped in together. It's two more Texas teams, and the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets have been playing very well since a little shake up there, and then the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yep.
Mavericks started off hot, been playing about 500 ball. The Rockets started off poorly, been playing much better. The Grizzlies are about 500 all season. How would you rank these three teams if you were to rank them following the Clippers at number four?
Well,
or if you have anybody over the Clippers, say it.
At this point, judging by what I'm looking at body language-wise, how they're playing, I actually like the Dallas Mavericks, and the reason I say that is because Chandler Parsons is coming back. You've got Wesley Matthews coming back from injury. Those guys will not be 100%, like fully 100% fit, ready to go until probably after the All-Star break, if we're being honest. And if they can go out and get another guy, they've got a bunch of veterans on that team and guys who want to win. Deron Williams has been in crappy situations all of his career. Dirk Nowitzki is still a leader and a very good, efficient scorer in this league, and has proven that night in and night out this season. You've got Raymond Felton, who's coming off of two awful seasons previously and looks a lot fitter and is playing well. I mean, they've got a lot of depth on that team, too. Overall, you've got, you know, three point guards that you can rotate through. You've got, like I said, a bunch of veterans. I like the Dallas Mavericks, especially in a playoff series. If you're going to pick somebody in a playoff series, I like the Dallas Mavericks right behind the Clippers or even potentially above them based on how they're playing and what they have available to them in a seven-game series. The Houston Rockets are playing well. I still have question marks about the Dwight Howard and James Harden, how that whole thing works and if it actually can work, because we really haven't seen it past last season, and this season it's just been awful. Until obviously the coaching change and all the rest of it, but and then you look obviously at the LA Clippers being there as well. I really like the Dallas Mavericks. I think they're a really good team. I think people underestimated them in the off season, and I think they're doing a lot better than people expected.
Yeah, no, I'm with you right there, and you know I know they've been playing 500 ball the last few games. Couple of tough losses, you know, Atlanta, Rockets, Kings, they got to win those games. The Pacers are a respectable team. D.C., they got to beat Dallas, the Wizards there. But there's something with the Grizzlies that I think they just got to blow it up. I think they've already reached their climax. That's such a tough situation that they're playing stale basketball. And they might catch a little fire come playoffs, but I just think the way the league is going, it's faster, teams are deeper, and the Grizzlies are still playing the same old style. Let's limit the amount of possessions the opponent team's going to have and limit our own possessions, and they're just not an efficient offensive team to get away with that. That worked when they were playing stellar defense, which they're really not doing that anymore. There's something stale about that roster, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're sellers at the All-Star break, and especially with the whispers that they might be parting ways with their head coach and Mr. John Hollinger, who made that leap from statistics to front office and kind of started the whole whirlwind of analytics, analytic people jumping into the league and getting high-powered jobs. Hasn't really worked out. Their moves haven't really worked out that well. I like what Houston is doing lately, but I think we're all not holding our breaths for them to continue that style. We all love a motivated Dwight. We saw it the other night. He was just a monster. He was up and down the court. He's someone who should go to the Oklahoma City Thunder and just join the whole, you know, villain squad and become just evil and just, you know, want to dominate the league and angry every night. Stop trying to be everyone's friend. Stop be smiling and just go out there and do your job, so to speak. But I'm with you there. I think Dallas is still the best out of that group, and I even like Dallas better than the Clippers just because the coaching edge is there. You know, they got the second best coach in the league outside of Pop. Carlisle is always going to have his guys ready no matter who he throws in there. He probably has more roster turnover than any coach in NBA history, yet he still continues to have his team in a playoff position and contend for a title. And Dirk, and something that most people aren't talking about, is he's having his most efficient season ever. I know you get older, you get wiser, but my God, is he just playing absolute unbelievable basketball. I think the big men around him are feeding off him. I know JaVale McGee's kind of come along the past few weeks here. Yeah, Zaza and him having that nice little bet there where whoever has more dunks is the gentleman's bet at the end of the year. Whoever has more dunks wins the bet. But yep. The caveat here is Dirk's – every 10 three-pointers Dirk makes counts as a dunk. So and it just seems like they're having fun. And you know, we obviously saw the expose on Darren Williams come out recently where he just sounds – you know, he talked about how terrible it was in Brooklyn and he had his life sucked out of him and his desire sucked out of him. And now he's motivated and back and – you know, he's enjoying playing basketball, and we're not going to have an all-star Darren Williams ever again, but it's nice to see him out there, you know, playing meaningful minutes. And the biggest thing, and you pointed it out, was the fact that Chandler Parsons is coming back, you know, getting his health back. We've seen some really good games from Wesley Matthews out there, a couple of 10 made three-pointers out there, and, you know, he's getting his stroke back and getting his legs back. It looked like something was not going to work in Dallas, and here we are, you know, they're 15-12, but they still have to win those games that they should win, as we mentioned. They should beat the Kings. They got to win those winnable games because the way the league is right now, it's very tough, especially when you're dealing with a lot of those Eastern Conference teams who've been having their way sort of with the Western Conference. You got to win those winnable games. And that, to me, is definitely where is going to make a break. All these teams are mentioning that's going to make a break. The Clippers, the Grizzlies, the Rockets, that 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 seed teams, that's going to make a break their season, is win those winnable games. And you know, we'll see who can do it moving forward. But we've got a couple minutes here. I wanted to, you know, not make our Eastern Conference fans a little upset thinking they listened to a whole episode for no reason. Who do you think, we'll do a quick table, quick Q&A here. Who do you think is going to end up meeting the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Boy, oh boy. I have a feeling, and, you know, don't get me wrong, the Toronto Raptors have played great. The Wizards are somehow getting wins at this current moment. We'll see how long that lasts. But I have a feeling that the Boston Celtics may be in the Eastern Conference Finals this year, and maybe I'm crazy. The Miami Heat will give them a run for their money. I really like what Miami is doing, and I really like what Atlanta has always just continued to do. But I think Atlanta is a little overmatched when they play the bigger teams. Mm-hmm. And I think if the Boston Celtics are healthy, that's an if, and Miami, you know, they have depth in a lot of areas, but I just don't know if you can count on them every single night, especially guys like Dwayne Wade, who are a little bit older. I do think the Boston Celtics could be in the Eastern Conference Finals. I think it's between Boston and Miami, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, those are two excellent teams to pick there. I mean, I think when Boston's at their best, they're proving that they can be a top-tier Eastern Conference team. When they're at their worst, they're not in the playoffs as they currently sit. So here's two quick rapid-fire questions for you. Out of these teams who are not in the playoffs, who do you think has the best chance to make it right now? And you've probably already given your answer here, but there's a couple that might surprise you. You got the Hornets at the 9th seed, the Celtics at the 10th, the Knicks at the 11th, and the Washington Wizards at the 12th.
Well, I told you Boston. If I'm going to choose a second, I'd say Washington. They've got way too much firepower to be that low in the Eastern Conference. Right. They should be better than that no matter what. I just don't know how much of a run they can make in the playoffs.
Right. So having said that, we have two teams that you think, well, at least one of those two teams will make the playoffs. Currently right now there are three teams who are at the bottom of the Eastern Conference in terms of playoffs, and that is the Chicago Bulls at 6, Detroit Pistons at 7, and the Orlando Magic at 8. All these teams have respectable, records. These records would be 4th in the Western Conference. We live in a backwards world. But real quick, before we go, who do you see out of those three teams, the Bulls, Pistons, and Magic, missing the playoffs?
If there's anybody that's going to miss the playoffs, I think it's the Bulls. They've got a lot of stuff going on in the back, behind-the-scenes work down there in Chicago. I don't know if Hoiberg's the right coach. I'm not going to push the panic button just yet, but I do think that Fred Hoiberg has a big dilemma on his hands, and I just don't know if the rotational stuff is going to work this season.
Right, right. It's always hard coming into a team that's already established and trying to reestablish it. And but hey, we're getting kicked off here, Oliver. As always, it's a pleasure, and have a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas to you and yours.
All right, you as well.
All right, take care, everybody.